For insulation and air sealing of California homes, Affordable Comfort is delighted to have the opportunity to offer this webinar series through support from PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric's Energy Training Center. This is part one of a two-part webinar. The second part is taking place this Thursday. I did want to mention that if you only registered for today, you need to register again in order to join the second webinar. If you have any problem with slides not flowing as we move through them, you can contact Eric Kaufman at this email address, and he can give you a roundabout. If you've got questions for Thursday's webinar, we'll take them by email, but you can also ask questions at any time using the question function that you have under your control panel on the right. When I mentioned just some ACI resources, these were scrolling as you guys joined the webinar. We've got past webinars archived. There's an amazing amount of material available through PG&E's classes, so if you're anywhere near Northern California, check out their online schedule and
Hey, Linda, just to let you know,
free. Yeah?
Your screen is not showing until we take the poll down. Right now it's just the poll that's showing.
Okay, I cannot see the poll, so can you summarize the results and then we'll go from there?
Vince, can you show the results? Vince, are you there?
This is Fitzgerald. 64 are here. 73% are attentive. Three questions.
Yes. By the way, we can tell if you're two-timing, because there's an attentive flag. Welcome everybody to the webinar. We are working on the controls to try to get the poll function closed.
There you go.
And you should be now at my screen, PG&E's 2001 classes. I want to just go back. If you have any problems with the slides being out of sync, contact Eric E. Kaufman at affordablecomfort.org. I've got to just go through these slides that I already mentioned. Wanted to mention that PG&E does not assume responsibility for anything stated by Jim and myself during this webinar. A brief introduction to the 1,000 Home Challenge. The goal is to achieve 60% or better reductions of total energy use using a combination of efficiency, behavioral choices, renewables, and community solutions. The 1,000 Home Challenge is a pilot. It's an initiative being hosted by Affordable Comfort, Inc. The key metric that we use to determine whether or not you've achieved 75% reductions is net annual household site energy. You can increase your threshold by the use of PV or solar on-site, wind on-site renewables. However, wood is considered part of your energy use. Each household has its own unique threshold that it must meet or exceed, and there are two ways to determine that threshold. Option A is a 75% reduction. That's 75% reduction in verified immediately previous energy use. And option B is, rather than based on where you're starting, option B is an absolute goal that incorporates the inputs of climate, house size, whether or not you're attached to another conditioned space, whether or not you've got something that burns to heat with or electric heat, and how many people are in the household. We've got a couple examples of what the threshold looks like for California climates. The difference between the two colored bars, or the orange bar, is for fossil fuel heating and the blue bar is for electric heating. So you'll notice that the colder the climate, the bigger the difference between the two. Basically, you get twice as much twice as big of an allowance if you've got fossil heating. But in most places, the heating portion is very small, which you can see by looking at this slide, slide 11. Heating is represented, heating's represented by red, and in most cases, the heating allowance is quite low, approximately 1,000 kilowatt hours per year. For those folks who don't think in terms of kilowatt hours, we've got the conversion here. 5,000 kilowatt hours equals about 170 therms. This is total energy, all energy used by the house. And in most cases, the household would have to use less than 5,000 kilowatt hours in most climates in California to meet the 1,000-ohm challenge. Again, just if you're having problems and if your slides aren't syncing with as I progress, contact Eric E. Kaufman at affordablecomfort.org. So this webinar has a number of learning objectives. We're going to cover some of these focused today on primarily how do you ensure uniform insulation density, how do you ensure complete coverage, understanding options for selecting points of access, and cover what conditions where dense packs should not be performed. We're going to in part address house types and features where air leakage reductions are particularly effective, and then this last one of begin to differentiate between a job well done and a job partially complete. The outline today is that Jim was addressing what's dense pack and then those other issues and what does it take to have a job well done. We will have an opportunity for discussion and questions at the end. You can also send those to us via your question option. I did want to mention that the webinar is not addressing a number of things that are essential to conducting and installing insulation. This is just outside of the scope of the time that we have, but it's absolutely essential that anyone performing work on a house would be very familiar with all of these points. And fortunately, there's a fantastic video that's just been posted that addresses all of those points that are listed available at this URL. So this is funded by USDOE Weatherization. It's my pleasure to introduce Jim Fitzgerald. This is a little bit younger Jim, but Jim's been doing this a long time. He's been a source of inspiration for me as a friend, as a colleague, as somebody I call when I'm working on houses and want to get his sense of what the opportunities are. He coached me by phone on DensePack, habitat houses I've done years ago. And Jim is somebody who's been a presenter and just an incredible leader, a mentor for many people at Affordable Comfort over the years. He's going to talk about his own experience that led to his recognition and awareness of how important DensePack is and the opportunity for DensePack to be far more than wall insulation. And that's the key nugget of today's webinar. So with that, I'm passing this on to Jim.
Hey, good afternoon. Please close.
So Jim should be able to pull the slide up soon. Yep, here we go.
Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Why DensePack? Is that showing up for everybody?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
But can you shift to presentation mode?
All right.
Great.
Whoops. Why DensePack? Let's take a step back. I lived in this house when I was a beginning baby energy technician, and on a weekend, a friend and landlord upstairs and my partner and I insulated the walls. We rented a little blowing machine and bought cellulose. I calculated the conduction savings. It's a back plastered walls, which means there's another layer of plaster and lath inside the wall. The cavity was only 2.5 inches thick. So we were expecting, I don't know, 200 therms or something, 150 therm savings. When we did the insulation, the January bill dropped quite a bit more than we would have expected. And it made me question whether I entered the information correctly or I was missing something in the model. I'm not quibbling about getting something better, but it's not what normally happens. Next year I was working with a contractor selling jobs, and this is one of the homeowners' house. This is a typical kind of Minnesota, Minneapolis stucco house, 2,000 square feet of sidewalls, and about a 1,200 square foot attic that had R19 already. The proposal was to dense pack the walls and blow loose over the top. And Howard, the homeowner, asked, "You gave me a bid for $3,000. What's it going to save me?" So I told him it was gas. It's 460 therms is the calculation, and if it's oil, it's about 350 gallons at the conversion we were using then. So he said, "Fine." We did the work, and then I got jobs from people had said, "Howard told me to call you." Turned out he hadn't saved 350 gallons, he saved 800. The 500 gallon fuel oil tank that he used to fill 5 times every 2 years never ran out that year. I went along my business, but I kept remembering, geez, 500 gallons of extra oil savings on one house. This is cool. I don't feel so bad about the four-wheel drive. But again, it's troubling. What happened? How did I miss? What am I missing in calculating the savings? It's not something I heard a lot. Typically it's finding a way to justify solar or something else. Turns out that when you're doing the walls, you're not just doing the walls. There's connections for all the framing and airflow in the house, and you can see that with infrared. One thing I'd like to refer to is we model and we guess, and it's good to look at the building with some independent eye, and the infrared can give us a view as to what's actually going on. What are we measuring? We're measuring airflow in cubic feet per minute with a fan that pressurizes the house to about a 1 pound per square foot in 15 mile an hour wind, the blower door. So we turn the fan on, close the doors and windows, and measure how much air is going out the fan. That is equal to all the air that's coming in all the openings. Along with this work, an auditor for a city program kept records and published that my work was turning out over, 35-40% tighter than the average, and four or five air changes an hour tighter than the next contractor. The program operators told me that was because I was starting with tighter houses. It caused me to get a blower door and actually measure the CFM 50 of the houses before we started. The first 32 houses that I measured were recorded and reported in Home Energy Volume 7, Number 1, 1990. We had 2,000 CFM 50 average reduction, just doing basic insulation. I did do some attic bypass ceiling where that was required. 4 of the houses, however, didn't have any accessible attic, no bypasses to seal that were accessible. They're listed in this table. They averaged 50% reduction in leakage, and the numbers were, these are very leaky houses to start with, but we reduced over 4,000 CFM average per house just doing the dense pack. So there's some air movement pathways characterized on the left of the screen where all of the leaks in the house connect to the ceiling joist in the middle and the floor, and that is open with a balloon house to the walls, which are also open typically up into the attic. They're loose or there's no top plate, or the top plate is above where the framing comes in. It's very active, and this is a detail that we would take care to pack real tight without chopping open the textured ceiling or dismantling the porch or whatever. But the numbers are good, and that's you can get a copy from Home Energy. What does it take to get both the insulation and the CFM 50 reduction? So the one thing is that you need to put material in tighter than what it says in the attic. I'm old enough that when I started, cellulose printed on the bag for walls, you blew it in at 3.5 pounds per cubic foot. That was just standard. I went to work for a contractor that was a second generation mineral wool installer. His father taught him to blow mineral wool at higher than 3.5. It was a little over 4, with two holes, and you give more material, you do a better job. There's a new product, engineered high-performance fiberglass wool. Currently, there's a test sponsored by NREL DOE that BPI is performing through the building science labs. And that fiberglass wool needs to be at 2.2 pounds or 2.5, depending on the manufacturer. There are several manufacturers being tested that have developed these special fiberglass products. They're not the same as normal blowing wool in the attic. They're engineered for resisting airflow and not for loft, not for attic coverage.
Hey, Jim, you mentioned BPI. Not everybody would know what BPI is. Could you just
Building Performance Institute is a nonprofit that has been providing standard advice and leadership on standards for energy auditors and contracting work, and they are coordinating this development among others. So there's a task group that's supported and using ANSI recognized approaches, we're an ANSI organization, to develop these standards. So one of the standards that's being developed is a test standard, because the current tests that we have don't really measure how the houses work, which in these cavities, it's the airflow that is parallel with the walls. It gets into the wall and then shoots up along inside the wall and goes out other places. Testing is typically across the wall, like it's a membrane. This is the other direction. So in California, there's a requirement that any material that's used in the state also be approved and listed in the directory of approved materials. All the cellulose in the directory is also approved by BPI for use in DensePack. There's a BPI standard 104, the envelope specialist that you can download and see the text. Four of the fiberglass materials that are in the directory are also approved by BPI for use in reducing airflow. They include John Mansfield Spider, the first of these products, Knauf's Perimeter Plus, possibly another product from them. CertainTeed has two products, InsulSafe and Optima. And of any manufacturer, fiberglass or mineral wool or cellulose is already okay, can get a test done right now to C522, which is an acoustical test, and get on this list. But there are three manufacturers, four products available today, you know, that can be used in this state, in this, for BPI. The picture is we'd like to seal, we'd like to extend airtight, actually build an air barrier every place we can. We want to seal all the openings and all the penetrations in the sheetrock. We want to close all the leaks and ducts that are in the outside and the boundary between the crawl space and the house. We want to extend a continuous air barrier across the top and bottom wherever we can. But with existing homes, that doesn't typically include taking off all the sheetrock or all the siding. So there's wall volumes, the exterior walls are typically spaces we can't reach to seal, but we condense pack those cavities, which reduces the airflow through the hollow cavities. Also, when we're doing the hollow cavities, we end up blocking the edges of all the chases that connect to the walls, the side of the plumbing chase, the edges of the floor drops and chases horizontal. Anything that happens to be connected to the framing gets limited when we do dense pack, as long as we're continuous, that we don't leave things open. And if we do that, that leaves no escape route for air. So when we try to do air sealing, the chasing leak phenomenon that troubles so many air sealers just doesn't happen. And the blower door work is much quicker and more effective. So this approach was integrated into the Minnesota weatherization plan under the guidance of Gautam Dutt, who was one of the scientists that first discovered bypasses and air leakage in the U.S. working at Princeton, and had a Princeton house doctor's approach where they used infrared to guide what they did, and his assessment of our use of dense pack is it completes his work. So this is really, you know, an extension of the Princeton house doctor approach, where we're guiding to do the biggest things next, and we're using the dense pack to kind of herd the air leaks into places that we can reach and get in. So I don't know if this makes any sense. It's a combination of seal very well what you can reach and dense pack everything you can't.
Jim, could you elaborate on just a sec on chasing air leaks?
Chasing air leaks is you've got a fan and it runs a pressure and it gives you a CFM, and you look at these holes, you know, the fan is telling you there's, you know, 400 square inches of hole, and you seal 20 square feet, and the fan is telling you there's 398 square inches of hole left, or 350, and you keep working and working, you do everything you can reach, and the fan doesn't go down that much, because the air, if you have a, like a baseboard between the floor and the wall, and it's got an eighth-inch gap, and you feel air going through it or see smoke movement when you puff smoke at it with a puffer, and you caulk the spot that it's leaking, now the next area of the baseboard that wasn't leaking before, now it starts leaking, and you're walking around the house. You're moving couches, yada, yada. You're chasing the leak. When you try to put up, I think when the Corps of Engineers tries to put a levee up along the Mississippi, it gets complicated when the water rises and it comes over some other place. Same idea. Pressure goes up in the system. My picture of the house is it's like a tree and there's all these branches and roots and you can't do very much going twig by twig. So find out where the trunk is. That's what this does.
So the key point of behind chasing air leaks is that you might not get the benefit of all the work until you get the last hole.
All of the air sealing, insulation is additive. You get a benefit from each square foot that you do, and you don't lose any faster through the square foot that you didn't do. Not like that with air. If there's 50 different pathways for this 400-inch total, because it's got all these alternate routes, you don't really get the total to go down until the last little bit is done. You know, when you're getting close to it, it starts going down faster. But it's how many holes below deck on the boat do you leave? You know, you're going to sink even with a small one. But it is additive. It's the last thing that you do looks like the biggest. And if you start with that, then some other last thing is going to look like the biggest when you get to it.
Thanks.
That's frustrating. This takes that away most of the time. This is a picture of what happens to loose cellulose when it's packed tight. It's no longer loose. It actually holds itself up. And air doesn't go through it as well. Same happens with the other products. This is showing that was blown at 4 pounds per cubic foot, and it works in cantilevers and floors and offsets. This is a prop that's, you know, at a agency where we're doing a training before we do work on a house. And one of the real common responses to this is, whoa, I can do this, which I like. High-performance fiberglass is one of the products, and we're watching Chris Schumacher dense-pack a test box on the left panel. You can see the tube is inserted all the way up to the top, and it blows in, and it fills the whole box up before it starts packing at the top. The picture on the right shows that test box that's opened, and the material actually likes to come expand a little bit because it's under compression. So goes through the same tube of cellulose. The fiberglass needs a different hose and a little bit more conditioning to get it, the particles broken up. So let's talk to the manufacturer about it. But we're blowing it just like cellulose.
Jim, there is an arrow you can use if you want to.
Like this?
Yeah.
Here is the tube that's in the wall. And that's got plexiglass on it. Here is the finished product. So this is a 2-cubic-foot box. Plan for this is available in BPI's website under the plans for their installer certification. It's a density test box, 2 cubic feet. These weigh about 30, 35 pounds when they're made with 2x4s and half-inch plywood. And if you blow 4.4 pounds in, that's 2.2 pounds density. And a 40-pound weight, you can do on a bathroom scale. How you do it is you weigh the thing empty, you blow it, and you weigh it full. Dense-pack is different than loose, qualitatively different. It turns into a block, and it's too tight to fall out of place. You have to dig it out of the walls. Will not settle in an 8-foot wall. It clogs up the path for airflow through the cavities, but it is not a barrier. There's, you know, it limits the airflow. And it's better than leaving it empty. On air barriers, we talked about what we want wherever we can reach it is to really do an air barrier, to clean the surface, seal from one intact air impermeable material like sheetrock or plaster across whatever opening to the adjacent air impermeable material with a flexible, durable joint material that's strong and supported and sealed continuous. Blah, blah, blah. So talk to ABBA, Building America, Building Science Corp, Passive House for specifics on air barriers. Now it's time for a poll. So who's the pollster?
Considering our luck on our last poll, well, let's just be positive here. No, I just, the poll function did not work on mine. Why don't we just go to the next, keep going, Jim.
Okay, happy day. Part one continued. This is a California four-square house that just recently was done. Gary Talbot from San Francisco is a good contractor. He's also on the standards committee with BPI. Sent us this photograph. So this is one of the house types that has significant air leakage reduction potential. This is a typical kind of house that we worked on in Minneapolis and other cities, that you can't get leakage that isn't there, and these pretty much present you with something to get every time you go there. They have often walls that are open to porch roofs, floors that are open to the porch roofs. Often the sheathing that you expect behind the wood-lap siding doesn't extend all the way up above the soffit to the plate in the attic. Sometimes the attic top plate is actually above the floor in the attic if there's a floor. And so all the walls, we find these houses often with all the walls open to the attic, which is, you got 120 feet 4 inches wide. A lot of air can move through that. And until you get that long leak and the openings that go off into the front porch and the bay windows and the baseboards and the joint to the sill, lots of the interior caulking that you would do is just for exercise. But this is one of the house types. I'm going into too much detail. His crew is doing a two-hole method, which is first developed by the mineral wool manufacturers organization in the 30s for blowing mineral wool. He's using this little bit smaller hole, but patching with plaster. Typically, you can use a setting joint compound like Durabond 90 if you've got enough holes that it's going to take 90 minutes to patch them the first pass, or Durabond 45. Use a setting joint compound and make the patch full thickness so it's got a strong bond to the cut, and then it won't crack. So here his people are cooking. Another installer for Gary's company is drilling stucco on a different house from the outside, showing the same approach. You check side to side with a probe, and they have a little plumb bob, spark plug, or a fishing weight on a string to see that there's no extra blockers for cross bracing or stiffness for, I don't think this house would have earthquake protection, it's too old. But you want to find all of the blockers side to side, which are the studs, and then any vertical, any blocks that are in the vertical stud space. Left is John's Manville installer putting spider in an inside wall with the insertion tube. Same end result to pack the wall, but he's got a 10-foot tube that can go in here and end up actually reaching all the way to the ceiling, so he can actually pack at that floor joist connection. The other half of the picture on the right shows where the siding has been removed in preparation for a re-siding job that's going to get rigid board put on it. So this is a good time to get extra benefit for very little cost. You know, the cost of drilling tar paper with just the sheathing is way less than taking off the siding. So it ends up with a better performance. That's just two ways to gain access to the cavities. If you have a tube, you can do anything within the length of the tube. And so you can move your access point to wherever it's handy or possible, or what the house will let you have. You know, it's better to drill in a closet than through the tile in a bathroom. On the left is from Opportunity Center in Bellingham, Washington, Pacific Northwest. Wood shakes, where you're seeing a little larger hole. They pull out the wood shakes, drill the hole, and then they're inserting the tube. They're following lead safe practices for the age of the house. Top right is a technician that's taken vinyl siding off, and their tube is going down. They're finishing the wall, doing the bottom. That happens to be in Cape Cod. DensPak is being installed all over the country all the time. The technician on the bottom right is saving time and money with a much bigger, he's got a 2-inch hose that he's dropped down the wall because the wall is actually open up into the attic. Now, without doing that, a lot of air can come up those, you know, 4-inch walls. This way he's dropping the hose down nearly to the floor and packing the whole wall, and so it becomes airtight and insulated at the same time. very quick.
Jim, two questions.
Go ahead.
Just to answer a couple questions that have come up, I know you'll be addressing a little bit of this later, but one person asked whether or not it's possible to do this if there's already insulation in the wall, and another person had asked whether or not this is strictly a dry blow or whether or not this applies to a damp pack or dense pack, a wet blow.
Usually the, I'll answer them backwards, usually the wet, you reserve that for new construction. You don't want to have, you don't want to be responsible for the teenager with a hose up in the attic over a quarter million, half a million, $2 million house. What could go wrong? The wet pack, the damp spray, is for open cavities that need to have a little bit of adhesion because there's nothing to hold them. We have a cavity to hold them. The other question was, what do you do if there's insulation in the cavity? With a tube, it doesn't matter. I guess if it's foam rigid, then it matters. If, we're going backwards. If you're doing a reducer, though, it's real tough to blow with this method if there's material in the wall more than, you know, an inch or two, or if it's flopping around. But with a tube, we can redo anything up until it's the density that we're trying to get at. It's really tough to reblow something that's 3.5-4 pounds. You know, it doesn't like to go through the material. But yeah, you can redo. Typically, it's not worth doing unless there's some big reason. We've had spectacular results on some of the redos on where it's existing batting or loose insulation. My wife's house was insulated, and it was a little house. It would have taken 26 bags if it was completely empty, and I redid it, and it took 26 bags. I don't know how they had what they did, but I can't comment on the other people. The hose that you're seeing drop down from the attic, that's got to have enough room for it to get in. If insulation is settled, you know, you can blow above it, but it's really better to, for consistency, to get the tube all the way to the bottom or all the way to the top so you're sure it's all the same from one end to the other and there's no uncertain place that's soft that might line up with a air leak location you just don't know about. We don't know everything. Okay. What is the density? How do you find it? You can count the bags. So if you've done, you know, 2,000 feet, and you're expecting, 65, 66 bags, 30 pounds each, to go into that house and get the 3.5 pounds per cubic foot, and you end up blowing 71 bags or 75 bags, you're confident that you got the density that you want, and you probably didn't miss much unless you filled up a bedroom with all of it. But the density is the material divided by the volume that it fills. And is coverage 100% with no air leaks? We don't know when we're installing unless we actually check every cavity that we're doing. The most single most important part of this is when you're opening the cavity, you check to the left with a probe and to the right. You, wherever you make the first hole, you go back to what you thought was a stud just to confirm that there's not an extra one there. And you drill just the other side of the next stud that you feel so that you catch any narrow one. If there's a wall that's open into the interior wall that's open into the space that you're doing and it's only a 4-inch or 6-inch cavity, you really want to get that, because if that is left alone, the air can just shoot through the wall and carry all through the middle of the house. So you want to make sure you get 100% of the area of the wall open before you start blowing. And then when the person's blowing, they check up and down with the tube and mark any blockers or places they couldn't get the tube so that another hole can be made. It's always better to have an extra hole. You can see the cellulose or fiberglass or whatever, mineral wool, but you can blow it extra tight there where you had some obstruction. If you get 100%, I was part of a program in Minneapolis, and there's four or five contractors that were tested 100%. All our wall insulation was tested with infrared, everyone. And none of us had any fails for a period of 5.5 years. Everybody got 100% all the time. Using the tube was the only way that we could beat the infrared all the time. Otherwise, you scan, turn on the blower door, and check. Who would you ask to scan? John Snell knows more than most people, and he's been really helpful in getting technicians practical knowledge on how to make buildings work better. He's showing a building in the background where the walls are all open to the attic, and you can see the heat that's just cooking the eaves in the building behind his right elbow as he's showing the scanner. John helped, actually was lead, I think, in developing ResNet's infrared certification for building technicians. He's trained many of the technicians that are in California, and he's worked with many of the people that are in your area. John's happy that we can use some of his images. So infrared is, for me, it's critical. If you've got hidden closed cavities and you're paying somebody to do something to them, how do you know they're not just sending you a bill and leaving the cavities untouched? You need a way to check. And infrared is a lot cheaper than taking the walls off. This is what a good job looks like when it's colder outside than inside, and it's just a 2x4 wall with no insulating sheathing. This is not a perfect wall, but it's as good as you can get with that wall with insulation. You can see the dark stripes up and down with little dots for the nails, and everything in between is lighter. This indicates it's cooler outside. The wood is about R1, 1.25 per inch. That's a R5. And if the R5 is that much darker than the cavity, this looks like a good insulation job. That's what all the work should look like when you're done without the blower door running, and then you turn the blower door on for 20 minutes, half an hour, and look at it again. It shouldn't change. If the material has stopped the air leakage enough to control it in most circumstances, you will not see a change on a relatively quick blower door at 50 pascals. That's what it looks like. That's what good looks like. If you let it run for 2 hours, 3 hours, then really little leaks end up looking really bad. It's hard to prioritize. This is a different view. It's from outside, and this job isn't the same quality job. When I look at this, I see both air leakage. You can see around the window that it's kind of whiter and shooting out corners. You don't see anything like a paintbrush, but the air is just shooting out. And the big double cavity on the right that goes from the slanted roof down, and it's hotter. It doesn't matter how we characterize it. What matters is that the contractor goes back and fixes this if this was a job somebody paid for. Could be that the homeowner just poured vermiculite down the open wall cavities from the attic, and some stuff fell and some stuff didn't. Or I don't want to guess what's happening, but this is different than that. This is what we want. This is not yet completed. So, but this does help to have this image when you're going back to fix it, so you know exactly where you have to go and what you have to do. What does the person in charge do? They send the contractor back. And the contractor needs to drill, gain access to the parts that are missing, and fill them. That stays that way until it's fixed. And so the evidence is in the house all the time. There's very little to argue about. If the density is low, evenly. So one of the things that we've seen in existing homes is that the whole house has been kind of fluffed, or the material is very low density. With lath, old walls that have lath and plaster, the lath is rough, and it will actually hold the insulation in place at a lower density than the insulation would see in the attic. So you can have a wall that looks the same, that the insulation is as low of R value as the wood, and you can't tell what's a stud and what's not with the infrared. That's not a good job if there is no insulation. So if the amount of cellulose, or some of those cellulose would be the settling one, if the amount of insulation is within, I made this up, if it's within 10% of the target, I think that's probably good enough. You're not going to have any settling or anything to worry about. Then it's just a decision whether you want to redo it or not. Otherwise, I would just have them reblow it to get it to the right density. Any fiber insulation that's in the cavity can be reblown to get the proper density. Minnesota, Garrison Keeler talks about the pretty good job that our people do, and I've done walls that the homeowner paid for 5 times, that somebody has been there doing incomplete work over and over again. So I guess that's a good customer to have. Drives me nuts that goes on. If it's relatively tight or it's uneven, what the technician does to do that is you have a switch that goes to air only, so you don't feed any material through, but have it kind of sandblast its way through, so it's all the way to the end of the cavity. You want to get all the way to the end every time, so you're sure there's no gaps or missing places, and then you can fill it on as you extract it back. Okay, to deliver the target density and to get uniform and complete coverage, we want to confirm that the blowing machine is in good shape, that it can reach 3 psi or 80 inches of water column. When you close the feed gate, block the outlet of the hose or block the outlet right at the machine and measure the pressure that the fan generates. This is most applicable to the medium and small sized portable or kind of truck, in a truck but on wheels, electric blowing machines, most common. So if the equipment works, then the person that's opening drills a hole, probes back to one side and ahead to the other, and drills another hole to find every single vertical stud in the area that they're doing. And the person, what we want with BPI is to adjust the machine. So if you're in a BPI installer certification, you're going to have to use a density test box like we saw the fiberglass guy using to adjust the machine to reach the target density. So you know the density is correct before you start. There's no guesswork. And then you go to the first hole and you insert the tube all the way to the end and you pack the first cavity. Have a blower door, you run that and you check that cavity with smoke. We want people also to see that they can find air leakage, so they have the blower door running, puff smoke next to the hole. The smoke gets pulled in on every house I've tested. I guess there's new construction or airtight drywall houses where they wouldn't be connected to the house, but when we're in existing, pretty much everything is active. So it pulls smoke before you start, you dense pack it, it should not pull smoke after it's packed. And then if that first cavity stops the smoke, they go on to the next couple, and you see if it's a 30-pound bag, and these are roughly 10 square feet per cavity, you go through a 30-pound bag somewhere before the end of the third cavity if there's no windows. So it's one bag for every 3 full cavities. Your buddy Steve is standing there on the first hole and he's asking you to put the second bag in, it's time to stop and go inside and see if there's some opening where the stuff is blowing into the house. So watching the material use is really helpful. If you're having a bad day, it's better to stop it soon. Before you start the work, one of the things that's really important to do is to check thoroughly inside the house for any openings under the cabinets or places behind a picture where there's a hole or broken sheetrock or any number of things that would let the insulation get from the cavity where you're blowing it into the inside of the house. And inside also includes closets and basements and crawl spaces. Be thorough and look. And you also see, is there a recessed light somebody forgot, or there's something funny with the wiring, that the wiring looks good, but it's all knob and tube when you get in the cavity because it was cheaper for the electrician to leave everything in place and make it look like a rewire.
So what would you do in that case, Jim?
You'd stop. There are states that don't follow the National Electric Code. Oregon is a state that changed their electrical code to allow reinsulation of knob and tube. They have a few cautions, and there are other jurisdictions that do that. Normally, you follow the code, and if you want interpretation, you ask the local official. But it's knob and tube wiring can't have any insulation within 3 inches. I think it could be underneath it, but not over or adjacent. It's time to stop. Real good advice to the technicians is, you know, be real thorough, do everything you know, and if you see something you don't know, get your supervisor. Don't make up a solution. Don't cover it up because you are in a hurry. If there is a break or a short or there's an overload and there's a fire, your name is on it, and that's all the liability goes on the contractor that put that material or the person. Check inside. Any number of things can surprise you, and there's no limit to the opportunities to learn when you go out into the world. Here are a couple Force 2s, which are popular, portable blower, and they're being set up. They're set up with a plumbing cap put right over the outlet for the hose and a magnehelic pressure gauge, a little round thing. See one on the right where you can read it. That needle is showing 50, 60, 75 inches of water column. Just to the next mark to the right is 80 inches of water column, which is the minimum for that type of blower if it's been maintained. If it gets down to a level like this, that means that maybe the wiring is off, or the extension cord's too small, or the generator is too small, or could be there's some dust that's been picked up by the fan, but it needs service. Some of the states, like Massachusetts, has a plan where every contractor working for either the utility, any utility program or weatherization, has to have their machine checked once a year. If it doesn't get 80, they don't get work. That can't be used on their jobs. I like that. The equipment should be working. When the machine is new, and when the seals are new, and when the fan is good, we're seeing that needle off to the right side, 130, 120, 140, which is about 4.5, 5 PSI. So this is just a check. Do you need maintenance or not? And did it clog up? Is that okay? Okay, number one, you check the machine. Number two, you blow a density test box. So here Chris is blowing a density test box on the left. He adjusts the machine, and he takes it to the scale. If it's not heavy enough, he has to dump it out and blow new until he gets the adjustment on the machine correct, so it's blowing the density that we want without him tampering with it. Okay, if you've got a 2-cubic-foot box and it increases it by 7 pounds or more, when you blow it, you've made the 3.5 pounds per cubic foot, and you're okay to go. If you're trying for a fiberglass at 2.2 pounds, it's easy to overshoot. And so he's real excited to be able to get it down to 2.2 pounds. And there's the block of material. So it's just, you would use that prop to adjust before you're doing the house. If you're blowing the cavities, you don't know until it's late. Okay, once you've got the test box, you want to demonstrate, or you want to open the wall cavities. And again, this is probe, drill a hole, probe back to the corner, open up the siding and drill another. The person on the left is, again, this is in Washington, and they're using the drill to put a hole in it at a bit of an angle, that actually helps the hose go in the hole more smoothly. So if the hole driller makes the hole in the direction the hose goes in, it's easier for the tube person to get it in. The person on the right is actually using the tube as a probe to go up and find a blocker. So he's marking on the just with his eye where he has to make the next hole. So he put that tube in the wall and it stopped up in this vicinity. So there's something in there that he has to account for, which means makes another hole above it. That's the drill and probe. Okay, and then you go up or you go down. Person on the left is starting at the bottom, packing behind that baseboard leak, and then they'll turn around and go up. You can also do it the other way, start at the top, near whatever leakage could be at the top of the wall. You want to have the tip of the hose at least no more than a foot away from where a leak is that you're trying to get, because the small machines like that have a limited amount of uniform density coming out the end. The truck monitor, there's other blowers that are more powerful that have a different character. You don't want to start with those, though. Does this make sense, up or down? And then it packs, it runs till it packs, and you pull it back a foot and let the velocity, and let it get going again until you pack the wall. So we mentioned smoke movement. So on the left, the holes are drilled. We turn the blower door on, and smoke released by the hole gets pulled into the hole. There's active airflow in the wall cavity. So there's air from that hole being pulled through the wall cavity back toward the blower door. We don't know where all the openings are. We don't have to know. On the right, you see when that hole is packed, the smoke just drifts across. Nothing happens. This is the test the technician can do while they're working. They know they got it tight enough when this happens. And you know that they're cutting corners if you check their work or they check their work halfway through and it's leaking. So that's a real easy start and stop. Doesn't guarantee they did everything. You got to put the tube in all the way to do that. And then when you're done, or when you've done one, say you've done three cavities, that should be one bag empty if it's a 30-pounder. You want to keep track, keep those empty bags so you know when you're halfway through how is the coverage going. So you compare the material coverage to the target density and the area that you're doing, the volume, you know, the thickness times the area. It's just coverage. If a cavity takes too long, if a cavity during work, you're going just fine, everything's set up, and you're running at about 130, 140, 150 seconds per cavity, and then this one is 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Time to stop. Maybe it's time to stop a little sooner. It could be that it's going somewhere. We don't want cellulose, which establishes capillarity. It can suck water up. We don't want to have something that sucks water up building a link between the wet soil and the wood foundation. So stop that, and that's one of the places that you're going to find openings that you couldn't see. Let's clean it up. Bag it up. That's a surprise. Lots of other places you don't want that to happen. During work, check the C. It's best to check before and avoid cleanup and other problems. You want to block all openings inside the house that might let blown insulation enter. You want to brace any weak surface. Find any non-recessed light before you blow, and you maintain the clearance or you replace the light. You also want to confirm that if there was a safety repair, like we've seen blocked chimneys or collapsed, you know, the masonry is folded in, or there's a problem with the boiler, and we know there's an order, and we were told that somebody else is taking care of it, but maybe they got distracted and didn't get there that day. We don't want to tighten up and keep all the air inside when that's hazardous, so we want to check that safety repairs are done before we go to work. This is a recessed light that my insurance company paid for when I didn't locate this in the kitchen ceiling. this was expensive. You don't want to find a recessed light this way.
That picture's not clear. That's a fire?
I'm sorry. This is a fire, yeah. This is a can. That's a recessed light can, I'm sorry. This is soot, charcoal. I didn't put the burn hole in the bedroom above, but it's not clear. Can you see the outlines of this?
Yep.
Move the box. Reality isn't always staged the way it should be. This isn't as pretty as it might be. My phone answering machine said, my house is on fire. The fire inspector says you did it. What are you going to do about it? We're going to pay. Lucky nobody got hurt. High-performance fiberglass. The different product. That's an example of one of the things we want to check for. Recessed lights have had and continue to have fires. Non-IC lights have fires all over the country anytime that heat gets trapped. And you don't want insulation trapping heat in those. The same machine, similar machines, with a shredder, but all the same stuff will blow the fiberglass, but we have to turn the pressure when we're operating it down to about half. So when the Force 2s are good, I didn't believe they worked. I used a friend's Force 2 and cellulose were blowing at 120 inches and they had to turn the Force 2 down to 55 or 60 inches of pressure to be able to get the density that we wanted for the target. A benefit of installing with lower density is that if you're in a house that's got sheetrock that's thinner or materials that are, the plaster is older and it's on the edge of some might be detached, there's worries about the integrity of the wall, way better to back off a little bit. If you back off the pressure, then you switch materials to one that gives you the same tightness at a lower pressure. That's cool. The other thing is if you have water, we're not going to see this with cellulose. Cellulose is fine. You can't put cellulose in a cavity like if you have a brick on the inside and then brick on the outside and a 4-inch space between. That's called a cavity wall. And if you blow that full of cellulose, you could have an experience like my first boss, which is red and green and blue stalactites, stalagmites coming horizontal out of the mortar joints on this house that he ended up buying because of the reaction between the borate and the lime and the mortar. Don't do that, but leave those alone. The high-performance fiberglass can be used right up against a chimney. So if you seal the bypass, this doesn't have a problem with heat. The blowing equipment needs to provide more conditioning, and the hose should be a ribbed hose rather than a smooth one. I get into details too much, I apologize. High quality cellulose has boric acid as a flame retardant, and newsprint and other recyclable paper is the primary, that's the component that gets shredded. That's as green as it comes. I've got a personality defect. I'm the happiest that I ever feel when I'm up blowing, thousands of square feet with tons of newsprint. I'm just taking care of waste and saving energy, and the world is right, and I don't have to explain it to myself. I'm addicted to insulation. Why pretend? It also, with the boric acid and the cellulose, it suppresses fungus. So we've had, took the wall off the kitchen up at the lake, and I messed up on the roof flashing, and it had been wet for 5-6 years. No mold on the sheetrock. That's really unusual. Not that you can use cellulose instead of flashing, but it was nice to see that the sheetrock I had to throw away wasn't black. Borates also restrict insects, but they're not a fumigant. I'm not going to get into stories about drilling into a hornet's nest and saving everything with the cellulose, but you can do that. What you want to avoid is contact with wet materials. You don't want to blow it on into the crawl space. So if you're blowing a house with, some houses have balloon construction. Virginia, the state of Virginia, has a lot of houses with the bottom of the wall open to the crawl space. The plate is below. I don't know what you're going to encounter. The age of houses varies, but you don't want this to blow against wet material. So if there's a leak in the wall, if there's a plumbing leak where the wall is wet, if there's a, you don't see this until you open it up. You don't blow that cavity. That needs to get fixed. Don't blow a cavity that has, when you drill open from the inside, if you look and you can see the back of the brick, don't blow directly against the brick. Unless it's a cavity, unless it's a thicker wall or a foot thick mass wall, but if it's just face brick and the rain that gets on the one side, it gets wicked in and it can wet that material, and that material provides a bridge to wet the actual structure. So I'll show you a picture, but both brick, stucco, and then cultured stone, actually, I haven't seen a lot of that, but that's worse than either of those for sucking water out of the air and delivering it to the inside. It's, cultured stone is color that's put in whipped cement, and it's light and porous, and it's as close to a sponge as you get and still be masonry. I apologize to any cultured stone suppliers that are on this call, but tell me it's not the truth. All three materials are moisture reservoirs. That means they collect, they hold moisture. Rain hits them, they turn color, they soak it in. And some of that water is delivered to the insides. They need to have a furring space or a drainage space or a weather barrier with a space behind them so that the moisture that is released on the interior has a way to drain out, and then a through wall flashing at the bottom or weeps that gets it outside and not into the house. Brick cavity wall construction shows efflorescence when the space between the bricks is filled, and chemical reactions can happen with borate, flame retardants, and with other stuff. This is a stucco house. On the left is an infrared with a, cheap little infrared, but you can see that it's not even. There's big areas that are light colored. That means they're warmer than an insulated cavity should be. And this house was done with open cell foam. And when I checked it, there is no sheathing at all. The foam is in direct contact with the masonry, so when that rain hits it and the stucco gets wet, the water gets sucked right into the inside of the house. The red box, I couldn't get the moisture report with the moisture pin readings to copy last night. This whole area is saturated. Oh, it's wet. It's over 20%. Saturation was in this area, and the foam that's behind the stucco, saturation in the stucco itself, the foam in this whole area is damp, wet. Looking at other details, this wall cannot be saved. What they did made sure that whatever the next step is, this stucco will not be on the house. It's not surviving. It's coming apart. Things are getting worse. That's maybe more than you bargained for on an insulation job. Don't go there.
One way to look at that, Jim, would be that you're setting up the house to get it ready to be reskinned.
That's what I told the homeowner. So it's a positive thing. It's nice that we're getting ready.
You destroy the outside, then you've just bought the super insulation job.
Yeah, right. So it gets that stuff out of the way. It'll be more even because the studs will be clear. You can wait, and if it freezes, it'll actually take itself off, which is a nice benefit. Here's a cross-section of a cavity wall. So this is actually much taller, but you can see there's a through wall flashing. So any water, this is outside, any water that comes in runs down and is directed by the flashing out the weeps. Weep holds, 4 foot on center. This is a fabric flashing, but this is a through wall flashing. This is a common kind of construction. If you're an insulator and you're trying to learn, here's something that you can do. It's not hard to fill that. Don't do that. This blueprint is from a building where the only thing that we could do, and we recommended it, I was just the, what do you call it, the analyst, was to put EPS on, to put a draining, this was 2-inch closed cell foam, more than better than regular EPS, and then a new surface. So they wanted hard coat stucco. So this is like a $15 a square foot repair to actually put the wall insulation and the drainage plane outboard of the whole wall. They had filled this with vermiculite, and what it did is wet the whole assembly so that all the sheetrock on the floor below molded, and all the kids that were in the daycare were sick. You start getting personal injury in that little bit of insulation. Yucko. Here's what that brick looks like on the outside. It's full of efflorescence. You don't want this to happen. When you go inside and open up the sheetrock and see the black mold growing on the sheetrock, you look at this exterior gypsum sheathing that was cut. This isn't without sheathing, but this was wet. And these drops are weeping. That's moisture that's just weeping through the tar paper, soaking the sheetrock, soaking the components of the wall, and just this stays wet all the time. Somebody went up a ladder to pour 2 inches thick of mortar and fill the entire space on this whole section of the building. Man, that's so hard to do the wrong thing, working that hard. But can you see these drops? It's not the best focus. But I want you to see
the cross-section from the top, Jim?
No, we're looking at the wall. I'm kneeling on the floor looking out.
Okay.
This is about the same area. We're outside on a ladder on the wall. This is the second floor near the baseboard. But, you know, where do you want to make a hole? The whole wall looks like this. This happens to be a school and a church where 10% of the congregation is sick whenever they go to church. The pastor, she throws up every time she comes in the building. Not a good thing. It's not all because of this, but this isn't good for the building or the people that are in it. Don't make a bridge between the brick outside and the inside of the cavity. In some cases, I had to look for this. It's an interesting world. Don't do this. Stay away, you know? Time for questions. How's our time?
Yeah, we've got about 15 minutes left, and we've got quite a few questions. A couple of the ones that relate to moisture are, how do you maintain the moisture integrity if you drill from the outside?
Oh, I can have pictures. So we've got, what did we have in here? Let's see, can I get...
It can take a while to go through that.
Well, not so long.
And in particular concerns about stucco, one person said, blowing an older home with stucco cladding is a no-no. Would blown fiberglass be an option?
Let's see. This is an older home.
And that's stucco, right?
This is stucco. 55% of Minneapolis proper is stucco. I did more stucco than I did other siding types because it's more of the building, more of the houses. And I like to patch so that the holes disappeared, and that got me lots and lots of business. And the stucco contractors charge us $3, $2.50, $3, $4 per hole to patch it. So it's nice to save $1,000 in an afternoon. But the leaks that we have with stucco are at the roof flashing, where if there's a step flashing, the bottom one needs to be fashioned as a kick out so the water is diverted away from the wall, doesn't go in. Not every time is that the case. There's window boxes that funnel water in. The sills end up cracking and splitting, and water pours in the sills. We didn't see damage on any of the existing hard coat stucco standard old construction. Houses have tar paper behind them, but the 90s and newer, just catastrophic. Minnesota is a tiny little state, and we had, what I'm told, is $1.2 billion, $1.5 billion of stucco, money changing hands over stucco on a state with a population of 4 million. It's terrible. I'm not going to get into all of that. You've got quite a bit of sensitivity to stucco here. If you make a hole, then you repair the weather barrier. So with stucco, typically this, when you go through here, you can cut it or you can break it. The patch is better if you're breaking it, or if you cut it, it's a smaller hole is better than a bigger one. But you go through the stucco, you go through the metal lap, and you go through the tar paper, and then you go through the wood. When you're patching it, you blow it and plug it, or put in fiberglass or a foam plug, and then put in a piece of tar paper so the moisture transport at that hole is the same as the rest of the wall. That way the patch dries the same as the rest of the stucco, and it all looks the same, and you've repaired the weather barrier. Truth is, it doesn't matter on the holes. We've had holes in the stucco. You know, if you're doing two hole, that's four holes for every, you know, two-story cavity. If you drill them in October, they don't get patched until May. And there's rain and all kinds of stuff that happens in that 5 or 6 months. Never had any moisture in any of those ever. One, when we were blowing a different fiberglass product, and that part of the house faced the lake, and there was 10 inches of rain with 70 mile an hour winds, you know, blowing up the houses with a fire hose. That was the only house, and that was like two holes out of, we're talking thousands and thousands of holes that in months of exposure. I'm much more worried about the windows being installed wrong with flanges and not being flashed and tar paper. But you repair the weather barrier, put the weather barrier back, and that's not hard.
Okay, the one point to mention, though, is Minnesota would have a much lower humidity in the winter with your cold temperatures than California would.
Depends. A third of the houses that I measured had water buildup only because of the winter. Because they ran, the houses have the tightest thing in the house is the stucco. The air barrier in that wall assembly is the stucco, and interior air circulates against the sheathing in the backside of the stucco all winter. And one homeowner from Alabama, they moved to Minneapolis in, you know, Thanksgiving. It's holiday time, so they run the humidity up like they liked it in the Gulf Coast, and in 2 weeks, they loaded up their entire house with water behind the stucco so that when they wanted to sell the house, they were put into a stucco moisture bin, and they couldn't sell anything. They lost all their equity. I checked it. You know, it seemed unlikely that it was rain during January, so by May, just turning the humidifier down, it all dried out. We see that in about, at least in Minnesota, that's about a third of them where it's an inside condensation building up. And you may have to, there may be other things to do. That's where the air barrier is important. But managing interior humidity is a really big deal. casement window where you crank the window open and the entire volume of the pocket under the trim that's holding the crank is all mushrooms because the condensation on the window was so bad that it flooded that whole wall. And that's wintertime.
But a key issue
you don't have that here. You're not going to have that here. You're going to have just the rain, right?
But sometimes the air would carry moisture, and other times it allows the cavity to dry out, right? It could go both directions.
Vancouver, I think, has the highest fraction or frequency where things get wet and they never dry out, and the temperatures are right where, 50 degrees, and it's mist all the time. And they've had they've gone through many different construction details. In Vancouver, they have the most restrictive requirements on stucco flashing and moisture prevention of anywhere on the continent, because of the exposure. And stuff never dries out, gets wet, stays wet. And that's tough. So you can't get the weather barrier properly installed with blown insulation. The insulation doesn't matter. It's the flashing. If the flashing is correct, if the flashing is good, it's going to be fine. If the details are done correctly, the house will stay dry. I read in code that there's a stucco test required here that none of the manufacturers have been able to pass. And this isn't about the insulation. I happen to be present at one, observing a test, and they cut the wall open on the inside, and I'm looking in the wall. This is a 50-year-old house, and you look in the bottom of the cavity, and there's clean sawdust from when it was built. It has never been wet in 60 years. It's completely dry, never had an issue. They put the misting device and the fan suction kit on the window. It flooded with water right there, failed. Therefore, it's the end of the world, and the contractor is the devil himself. The testing that we see used in some cases for litigation is testing that's designed for when you're doing a commercial building and you have a mock-up wall built to prove the concept, that construction can work. It's unfortunate that I shouldn't be talking about this. It's none of my business. But
we've got a bunch more questions I wanted to cover, too.
Let's go.
If cellulose, do you have an opinion on borate versus ammonia-based sulfate?
Both of them forever. With no moisture, it doesn't matter.
I'm not talking about moisture, just concerns with them.
Well, yeah, the sulfate, the half sulfate, ammonium sulfate, and there's some borate in it. Most of the manufacturers make both. Some make just the borate, some make just the sulfate. If the material is dry, the sulfate stays dry. If there's water that's added, then some of the sulfate releases ammonia or other things, and I've been present when that's happened. It can be really bad. There's some concern now about the difference in paper stock where you get cardboard and other stuff because newsprint is scarce, and we may have a different chemistry going on in the material. The borate is safer, and I think for existing, if you're blowing in the attic where there's ventilation and nothing is trapped, and should something happen that could be vacuumed out, I think it's fine. Use whatever. In the wall where there's a potential for something to get into the house and it's tougher to deal with, I would only put in, this is my own preference, so nobody tells you anything. You don't have to do any of this. I feel better with a borate process, a borate material in the wall. And I get a little bit of bug control and fungus control.
Okay, would you dense pack a home without building paper? For example, an old Victorian.
Yeah, we have a couple different sheathing types where I see it with tar paper, and that hasn't been an issue if they're sheathing. And on my own house, I blew the front porch walls, which just have 4-inch lap siding, over the cap. That's it. And that hasn't been an issue. With stucco, there's a type of stucco lath that's got dovetail joints cut every 4 inches, and the stucco actually goes, the cement goes into those dovetail joints, and that's what holds it in place. They don't use the same kind of nails and other reinforcing. So there's no tar paper on that, and those have been just as durable as the other ones. Why the new doesn't work, we don't know. NAHB has recorded in class action suits where there's hundreds or thousands of stucco houses reclad. Oh, they measure when the stucco is off, where was the water actually coming in, and so they started a database on which details fail the most frequently with the most difficulty. North Carolina had a bunch of houses, and I think 2,000 square foot average, and the average damage area was 30 square feet, 25 square feet. So it's localized, and it's localized around deck penetrations, kick out flashings, no weep screed where the wall comes down and sits against an upper roof and that wicks moisture up under the window corners. Windows seem to leak a lot, but not very much water in any one place, where a kick out flashing that's bad can take out a 30-foot wide section. It, you know, pours the water in. But so they keep track of that.
Primarily a bulk water problem.
Yeah. Right. Wintertime, cold climate's different because you get it both ways. We get condensation, we get water on the outside and condensation on the inside of the flashing. It's dry in the winter, but in the stucco wall, it's a wet cold. Not like a, never mind. So here's tar paper. Just patch the tar paper. You know, get a little square. Go ahead.
So could you elaborate on how you patch that tar paper? Somebody wanted to know if they slit the hole horizontally on its center line and then try to make sure you've got a lap extending.
Well, it depends on what you did. You know, if you tore it all off and you just put a piece in that covers what you did and you flash it in shingle style, you know, tuck it in above and have it lap below. If it's just a little round hole, do the same. You know, cut in or use a urethane plug or a styrofoam plug, and put sealant on it. Just put it back so it's together. I don't see it as a risk. Where there's a risk is where there's a flow of water, so the siding is going to keep it off. But always want to put the weather barrier back to the condition that it had before you got there. And if you have to put a new piece of tar paper across that, you know, so what? You do it. Tyvek works, you know. Lots of things. Just get it back so the water above is directed out, and you do it with pieces. For stucco patching, we cut them into little like 3-inch squares, so you've got them in your nail pouch when you're going hole to hole. So that's not hard.
One comment was made was that California does allow insulation on knob and tube wiring if an electrician signs off.
Yeah, so it could be by jurisdiction too. So I don't. National Electric Code changed to disallow insulation in contact with knob and tube in 1987. I had done, 1,500 jobs, 2,000 jobs by then. And you look in Minnesota and all the attics have 6 inches of fiberglass, so there's a million homes or half a million homes where the knob and tube has been under insulation for 50 years, 60 years. The frequency of problems in that state is really, really low. Other states, I did roof cavity insulation in Philadelphia. You know about that more than most, Linda. And when I trained the roofers how to do insulation, we had 6 fires in 6 months. One of them that was 20, 25 minutes after the insulation guy had, after the roofer had pulled the insulation hose out. The wiring is in bad shape. And just the stress of anything caused it to go. they had done 10,000 roofs in the 100 years or so they had kept records and never had a fire until I went to help them. You don't want to be bragging about causing fires. You know, fire is that's a really bad day. But it depends on the wiring, and there's a test you can do. So we did Larry Kinney, who's a PhD energy geek, found a sure test circuit tester that showed it runs a 15 or a 20 amp load on and off 20 times per second, and it measures the voltage drop at that location. So if it's a voltage drop under load that is the issue. If there's a break, if there's a short, the electricity crossing that short or break heats up the wire, and it's really bad. And the higher the load is, the bigger the temperature is, and there's no defense against that. That will cause a fire. If the heat is trapped, if the heat can get away, then it's okay. Better to get the wiring upgraded. I can't, with a straight face, say I want to work hard to keep this 75-year-old wiring in place so that somebody else can worry about burning up. You know, I got it. Get over it.
The electrician won't be happy if they're trying to rewire a house that you just finished dense packing. But with that, we're out of time. There were some questions that are particularly related to topics we'll be talking about on Thursday, particularly the issue of the strategic junctions, the issue of houses that are ineffectively insulated and what can be done, the issue of re-insulating where you've got fiberglass bats in strategic places.
Yeah.
The issue of settling in a wide, particularly wide cavity pack, the issue of some of the, I think Mark Rosenbaum's questions regarding the different behavior of fiberglass and cellulose in terms of their ability to absorb and give off moisture. So a lot of those things will be covered on Thursday. But by all means, send additional questions to me with Thursday webinar in the title. Jim, if you could move to the last slide of the presentation. And you do need to register. You won't get the URL if you don't have the if you don't register. So make sure that you've registered. Oops. Actually, go to the and we look forward to your feedback. We appreciate you being on. We will
thank you so much. Yeah.
We'll be posting the PowerPoint and sending an email.